in connection with FEE related problems. Your second question was, isn't this a very vital thing for the shuttle? It is. Electronics systems checkouts are absolutely key to any attempt of reducing the turnaround time for a shuttle, while at the same time maintaining the kind of reliability that we have attained with systems like the Saturn V. So microminiaturization, high-speed computers, and modern checkout techniques are the key to success of the shuttle. I would say both the reusable, the total reusable and the half reusable.
Well, won't you miss the Cambridge facility then in your shuttle development? Or will JPL, Marshall, Goddard, do you think, handle electronics for NASA adequately?
Well, they have to. They have to, of course. I might add that the electronic research facility in Cambridge was, of course, a relatively young organization still, and had they been as firmly entrenched as JPL, for example, their sudden demise from the scene would be felt much more sorely than it is. I mean, they haven't really begun to carry their load. Kind of killed before they really got off the ground.
With budget dollars in years to come, you hope the dotted line will start to rise along about fiscal 1972. Must it do that in order to get the shuttle and I suppose the first space station module up by 77 at least? Or can you do those with steady level $3.3 billion funding in terms of $70?
Well, if you consider that not all that money is there for logistics, but following the formula that the new goals and objectives of the agency, in other words, the development of our capability of communication satellites, Earth resources and weather and so forth, and astronomy missions and so forth should come first, and the logistics should only support these things, it seems to follow that there comes a point when we, below which we simply cannot afford to get involved in a major new logistics system because it would use up all our resources that should go into the real true goals and objectives of the agency. So there is definitely a point below which we couldn't afford.
You're saying that if you don't get any more than $3.3 billion in $1970 into the 70s, you can't get those things up there by 1977?
That is correct. Now, if this looks like a temporary hold, and the curve would turn back only a year later, then you are talking about postponing the issues maybe for a year. If the curve doesn't turn back at all, then it would probably be correct to say then we have no business of doing it in the first place.
How much more money would you have to start to get
up there by 1977? Another billion? Another half a billion?
Well, I would say something in that order, yes, a billion.
Dr. Von Braun, on June 15, NASA is preparing to award up to three $8 million contracts to three teams to study a completely, I thought, reusable shuttle system. Now, will they look into a partially reusable system? Or will their studies be further on down the road? And question number two is, some industry officials said when Congressman Teague's group was touring that NASA may this summer appoint a task force to come up with more detail, more body, to supplement the Space Task Group report. Do you know anything about that?
Well, to answer the second question first, we are right in the midst of doing that. The Space Task Group, of course, roughs out the overall objectives, but since nobody knows at this point in time what our next budget will look like, it follows that you cannot really be too specific about rates and sequencing of some of these projects spelled out in the Space Task Group. So we can harden our plans only as we come a little closer to hard budget figures. The question with the study contracts on the completely reusable vehicles. We have two study contracts out with industry on completely reusable vehicles where details such as payload and the price we pay for cross range and so forth have been spelled out in much detail. We absolutely need these studies and their results to be able to even compare the relative merits of completely reusable vehicles versus half reusable systems. But there will be more studies on the half reusable systems also.
Dr. Von Braun, you mentioned early on the planned emphasis on increased science and practical applications. In the area of practical applications, forgetting about communications and so on, which is one obvious area that can be fairly well handled, people like Bill Nordberg, the chief scientist on the Nimbus project at Goddard, tells me that he anticipates a tremendous amount of data being returned from an Earth Resources satellite, for example. Do you, in your own planning, foresee the need for perhaps a new government agency that would be, call it what you will, Earth Resources, a Department of Earth Resources, or someone who can take the data that NASA, being the primary R&D agency, supplies to them and analyze it and disseminate it to the proper groups?
Well, how this will develop in the long haul depends probably on how successful our resources program will be. In the shorter haul, the situation looks as follows. NASA sends up a series of Earth Resources Technology satellites, we call them ERTS, E-R-T-S, which are essentially designed to find out what sensors are best and to find out what statements you can really make about what these sensors look down on, interpret the fingerprints, the signatures of the areas overflown, etc. The Department of Interior will be the operating agent for Earth Resource Operational Satellites, or EROS, E-R-O-S. And NASA's function is essentially, with the development effort, to lay the groundwork for whatever the Department of Interior ultimately wants to do and wants to pursue operationally. I am not aware of any plans of setting up any other agency than the Department of Interior for this. On the other hand, it's of course quite clear it's in the nature of satellites that they overfly not only land areas but also ocean areas. So whether you like it or not, they also collect information in oceanography and information other countries that are definitely not interior but exterior and so forth. So I think this is a question that the government at the very highest levels may sooner or later have to address. For the time being, Earth Resources all our dealings in the Earth Resources area are really between NASA as a developer and the Department of Interior as the potential user. I have to leave at 4:15 from the garage, so I have to leave this room at 4:05. I would suggest we wind this up at 4 o'clock. Yeah.
Werner, I'd like for you to expand a little bit more on what seems to be a new policy. Is it maybe a new policy for the budget coming next year or something? Because you show a chart here, a graph, where that even though the NASA budget climbs logarithmically, it looks like the money for new starts, logistics you referred to it, continues to go down.
No, the curve that went down showed only that part of the money that's already committed.
Already committed.
Preordained by decisions made in previous fiscal years.
But you also implied that the policy is now that we put our money into applications and science, and that new starts such as shuttle and station really have to take the back seat on this funding. I mean, the proportionally it's going to go for applications.
Well, I would put it this way. In the heydays of Apollo, we had a very simple and clear charter, land a man on the moon in this decade and bring him back alive. So there was very little talk about goals and objectives. The goals and objectives were stated back in 1961 and have never changed. In this new environment, we have to make these the applications and the science returns really justify and pay for the space program ultimately. We feel very strongly that unless we can prove to the scientists and the people on the street and other agencies that we can really that there ought to be a space program that is useful for men and useful for science, and we really have no business being there. And for that reason, it is quite clear that we have to establish our goals and objectives first and then define the hardware on the basis of what we propose to accomplish, rather than like an Apollo, where for years and years and years we knew pretty exactly what hardware we needed, and the hardware really changed very little.
Doesn't this actually mean, though, that we're accepting a course of moving toward what a lot of people have been crying for, more and more money toward these unmanned applications, using what we've already developed?
I wouldn't necessarily put it this way. There may be some paying applications that could be done far more effectively with men in the loop. For example, I mentioned communications here. The entire Washington automatic telephone system, for instance, doesn't need men or girl, for that matter, in the loop to make a connection. But if you see if the bell girls go out on a strike, you will have a very hard time placing a telephone call after 3 days, and after a week, half the system would be dead, and after months, it would be completely dead. So the upkeep of an automated system requires people in the loop. And I think some of these imaginative communication systems and traffic control satellites in orbit, but also resources systems, may indeed need man in the loop, not in order to reduce data or anything like this, but just keep the systems going.
Dr. Von Braun, sort of facetiously following Vic Cohen's question, I'm wondering if you wouldn't love to have the Russians pull a sort of a 1970 version of Sputnik 1.
Well, I think a little competition helps everywhere, getting more performance. I think this is no exception.
You seem to have formed a pretty good idea what the space rocket plane will look like. Can you give us some of its characteristics, how many people it will transport, and how big it'll be compared with an aeroplane?
Well, the final question of payload is really one of the least settled ones. Some people promote smaller vehicles because the logic goes, if the vehicle is smaller, you will make more flights, and of course in the nature of a shuttle vehicle, that it loses money while sitting on the ground, and just like an airliner makes money while flying. So if you have a certain amount of traffic, you may be in a better part of the utility spectrum, a better environment if you have a smaller vehicle that you can work around the clock rather than a big one that soaks up all the payload you can buy and then it sits on the ground for a whole week because there are no payloads left. That's the point in favor of smaller shuttles. The argument in favor of larger payloads is that you want to go into higher orbits and lower orbits, and any vehicle that can also has a substantial high orbit capability has quite an impressive low orbit capability. And so by making it too marginal on the low orbit, you may lose a lot of markets on the higher orbits, particularly synchronous orbit. There are lots of market studies going on in that area. Where will the market really be? It's almost like an airline trying to find out what is the best airplane for my route structure. Only the airlines know what their route structure is, and we don't know it so well.